When your co-host nearly gets put on the season-ending injury list, it's That's So MLS.
Myself,
Nick Thornton, and it's great to hear my co-host, Andrew Bates.
Hey, how's it going?
It is good to hear your voice, my friend.
Sorry for my absence. We've been talking about chill soccer for a couple of years now. You never know what's going to happen to anyone, and I got hit by a viral infection of some sort, and then just as I was starting to get better, got hit with a second one, and then pneumonia. Don't you just love it?
Hell yeah. Ugh. Well, I'm glad you're feeling better. You sound a lot better.
So I had an accumulation of TAM in my lungs and had to get rid of that. But it made my voice not fit for broadcast. So I'm very pleased to be back and talking soccer with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate that. It's a long time to be talking when your lungs are full of glass and your voice is not working for you. This is, of course, a North American soccer podcast. There's lots of stuff that's happened, right? We've all been watching. In order to do this, I think we're going to start with the Canadian MLS clubs as a way of kind of catching us up, right?
Well, that's right. I've been, you know, monitoring the performance as I always do of the Vancouver Whitecaps. And it's the same thing every week. A 1-1 draw. Just like stepping right up and say, hey, would you like another draw this week? We've got different kinds of draws. There's no limit to that. You can draw in a scenario where,
hey, remember that season where we just couldn't draw? It was all or nothing, and now it's sort of still nothing.
Yes. It's like, would you like to draw because you conceded the lead in first half stoppage time? Would you like to draw because you
conceded in the first 5 minutes?
Would you like to score in second half stoppage time? any possibility is available to you. Would you like to score draw because of an own goal? Any possibility is available to you as long as you are okay with ending 1-1 at the conclusion of the match.
There's a lot of different ways to draw a game. Is what we've learned. Well, let's go back a little bit. I mean, we don't have to dissect every single Vancouver game that we've had, but I think that there's important things that kind of emerge from each one. So going back a ways, of course, before we got these last three draws, we had a loss. So in some senses, we're doing better, I guess. But San Jose, of course, beat us 2-1. I feel like the only really notable thing from the Whitecaps in that was that Schopf scored a goal, which hasn't happened yet, and was good to see, because I don't always know what his role is on the field.
That was a piece with the season opener against Salt Lake, in that, you know, Whitecaps score and things look reasonably good, and then things really fell apart in a short period in the second half.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, for a counter-attacking team, I feel like we've seen this a bunch where they're the ones that get caught out and get caught in transition. I mean, it was two good goals from San Jose. Like, I keep forgetting that Luchi Gonzalez is there now as their head coach, and they just look like a much more well-put-together team playing with a bit more coherence. Although I feel like we still struggle against San Jose in the worst of times for them, but that wasn't a great look. And then, of course, we had, in between those MLS games, we had two Champions League games. So, you know, the bit of balancing for Sartini to do in terms of lineup rotation. But, you know, we made it through in the Champions League, but it wasn't like at the sacrifice of league games necessarily, but we have continued to struggle to find a way to get all 3 points.
Yeah, that first one was weird because I did not get to see the away leg of the Champions League game against Real España. Vancouver getting a 4-1 scoreline in any situation was a pleasant one.
Yeah, like, we'll take that any day of the week.
The fact that they lost the away tie, but then, you know, of course, won on aggregate is, you know, dampens that a little bit, but, you know, CONCACAF away.
Yeah.
You can't understate the challenge involved there.
And like, despite starting, I think a strong lineup with a little bit more rotation than the first one, I imagine, you know, that's not I don't know that Sartini drew it up that way, but, you know, pound your opponents in the home leg and then go away and just don't concede more goals than you scored is not a bad strategy in this tournament. Like, considering the teams we've been up against in MLS, I think that that's like a totally acceptable result. And of course, now Vancouver will be facing LAFC. Good times.
It'll be interesting.
It'll be good times.
I was going to say also, so as noted, there were two more matches. There were two draws against Dallas and the draw against Los Angeles Galaxy.
Yep.
Which were both ones where the Whitecaps went up early and then conceded to draw. I felt that this one that had just happened against Minnesota was quite interesting because despite being the away team, Vancouver, and this relates to your note about pounding away, is that the Whitecaps had far and away the better, you know, of the big chances in my estimation. The 23 shots to 8.
That's in the Galaxy game?
No, that's in the Minnesota game.
Minnesota game, sorry.
5-2 on shots on goal. Just a game where they had a Brian White hit the bar. There was a disallowed goal before the one that they did score in added time. Clearly, the momentum was going in their direction. What do you think? Is this a case of a team that can't bury its chances? Is it finishing, lead up, defense? What's the part that's?
Yeah, I feel like the Minnesota game is actually kind of a good summation where the Whitecaps are at right now, which is that it's not terrible. It's also certainly not good, but it's just sort of good enough-ish. And as a starting point to the season, it's not great, but we are getting some points.
Right.
And I feel like in this game in particular, you know, I think the major through line of all the other Whitecaps games up to this point had been, for 15 minutes in any given game, the Whitecaps look like a really good team. It's just that you don't know when that 15 minutes is going to come. They don't really seem to know when it's going to come. And it only lasts for about 15 minutes. And then the rest of the game is just inconsistent at best. And as you said, you know, just in terms of chances created, the Minnesota game was much more promising. I thought it was a pretty good goal from Garcia that got Minnesota the goal, just taking a place between two center backs. I mean, it was Veselinovic's to mark, but he chose to mark someone else instead. It happens. A little bit of everything here. Brian White had a really good chance with a near bicycle kick, rattling one off the bar. And then if there was something that I feel like was missing from the Whitecaps, or at least one of the pieces that's missing, is like they really didn't add a ton to their roster. And they have been in the last few seasons drawing on more from Whitecaps FC2 and from their academy and bringing those players in. But we've seen that, you know, those players have struggled for minutes or they're sort of here for a season and a half in the first team. But again, you're not really sure what their role is. And then they're off somewhere else. It's great to see in the Minnesota game that rotation and those younger players coming in actually being kind of the difference makers, which attaches to the other thing that I think is a through line for me, is that I feel like Vanni Sartini's best 11, it's not for lack of trying, but I do feel sometimes that there's certain players that maybe feel a little bit like, well, they're just naturally going to be starting. And I think, obviously, with any good team, you're going to have younger players or just any players that are pushing your first team for minutes. And I feel like now that race is going to be on. I mean, Brian White has been playing really well. But if you're Betcher and you're coming in and scoring, you know, a late time goal like this in such dramatic fashion, a little bit fortuitous, but he gets into the right spot. I think that puts a good amount of pressure on Brian White. And for a team that struggles to put the ball into the back of the net, I think it's good to have multiple scoring goal scorers all vying for minutes. So it's like, you see the pieces there, but it's certainly not anything where I'm like, oh yeah, like any minute now, we're just going to be lights out killer. Like, if I'm honest, from where I sit, I feel like we're going to end up 3 points below the playoff line. Like, it just, everything I've seen from us so far sort of screams that. But we'll see. We'll see how long we can go getting 1 point from a game before it, switch on and try to make a push for the playoffs.
To me, it influenced completely by the fact that the playoff line has moved relative to the bottom of the table.
Yeah.
I am a little bit more hopeful, but I agree with you that, like, the dream that has existed in all of our eyes has been when Vinny Sartini was first appointed as a caretaker manager, and suddenly the Whitecaps magically leveled up to being like one of the top three best teams in the league over the stretch period that did not last into the playoffs. Yeah. But for a second it was like, oh man, we're a really good team. I feel like there could be importance to a pretty good team. Improvements to, like,
yeah,
you know, to the point where we might have been hanging around that 6-7 playoff, which would have been a playoff line last year, mm-hmm. and which we'll be comfortably in this year. That's kind of where that's where I would sort of look at this team as it currently stands, or everything starts clicking. I don't know, but I agree with you that the interesting way this roster has been constructed, the way that it is that there is, like, a set of players that have expectations and money and time behind them, and then a set of players with much less money and much less expectations and much less time behind them, and trying to find ways to bridge the gaps between those things is challenging. It's a lot easier if you're Simon Betcher and you do score. That'll help the rotation somewhat. But I wouldn't say that this was... I would say that if you look at the names that are that started in Minnesota and the names that are on the bench, there aren't a lot of people that rotate.
Yeah. That's true. And just taking a quick look at the Western Conference standings. Given the way that Houston and Portland have been playing, it feels like we got to be able to take one of those playoff spots from them. I mean, I know there will be movement in this table, but, you know, we also know that things in the West can, once you're stuck at a certain point, it can be really difficult as teams pull away. But yeah, you know, this sort of like sometimes too quick brand of football that Sartini's trying to play, it does look amazing at times, and it is really effective at times. It's just that, you know, it's never for a lack of effort. Like, that's one thing I feel like has changed, is at least we can say that it feels like, for the most part, all 11 players really do give a shit, which we've not always had
like
in
that.
Vancouver. We like that.
We like that.
You know, and, like, you can say what you want about Ryan Gauld's shooting, but I'm like, at least we have a center mid who's, I know he's been playing more forward, but, like, that is actually taking shots. Like,
yeah,
it's something, right? Some of those will go in, right? They have to. But we still can be very easy to score goals against. And that for me is the thing that just is always going to come back to haunt us if we can't lock that back door a little bit. Anyway, that's Vancouver.
The next team to attempt to jiggle the lock on the back door will be Montreal, who visit BC Place this weekend. They have had somewhat of a rough start. They had their first three games on the road, did not get a goal in any of those games, lost all three to Miami, Austin, and Nashville, and then went to... I'm not informed off the top of my head as to if it's an issue with Stad Saputo, but they returned to the city limits of Montreal to play in the Stade Olympique and had quite the outing against Philadelphia.
Yeah, they sure did. Yeah, given that earlier results were not great, all losses, no goals isn't a great way to start the season, which is why when you talk about Vancouver, you're like, hey, it could be worse. The Philadelphia win, I feel like people have been calling a little bit fortuitous, and definitely there's some silly calls going on here, and I'm not quite sure, how to summarize it, but I feel like overall what won Montreal this game was also a bit of grit. And certainly nobody was expecting Montreal to turn around after three pretty dismal performances to be playing Philadelphia Union, who've not been lights out amazing either, but have been obviously the Union. But this was the first time that I've seen Montreal like really looking as a team desiring to win a game, and being a little bit craftier with how to do that against a good opponent.
I felt crafty was a good explanation of Montreal in this game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cause there were lots of opportunities. The penalty kick on 3 minutes, comes from a lot. I felt a lot of like good buildup work. There's a lot that's going on well in the midfield for that one. You had Victor Wanyama played a ball forward, Lapalainen kept it in the penalty area, and was able to serve up the player that took that shot and ultimately won the penalty, Chouinard.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good game for Kyoto. He's such an interesting player because there's definitely games where you're just like, where is he? I haven't heard his name in about half an hour. You know, where he just, yeah, is just sort of anonymous. And then in other games, he's so strong. He's so quick. He's so intelligent with his runs, with his positioning, his defensive work ethic. All of it's there. And he looks like, you know, one of the top, top strikers in MLS. And on his night, I think he is. It's just that you don't see that necessarily always, you know, one game after the other, but just muscling past defenders. I feel like ultimately what lost the Union this game is just that Montreal looked physically stronger and just kind of bodied the Union out of the way, which is saying something, because Philadelphia Union are not a small team and not known to be shrinking violets by any stretch. Which is why I thought it was such a notable, interesting win for Montreal, is I felt like they played a very Union-esque game, and Philadelphia just looked like they weren't sure what was happening.
I would say that, like, you know, we were talking about Vancouver, like, where is the missing point there, and that being the burying of chances? Clearly, the issue for Montreal is a little on that back line, because that first ball from Mikael Ure, he catches Montreal sleeping. Very five people are on him, but nobody's really on him.
Yeah,
like nobody is close enough to do.
Well, that's MLS. That's him. MLS marking in a nutshell. It's just like, I'm technically marking him. Like I'm technically sort of in the right position, but I'm certainly not actually tight to him. My body's not really in the right position to anticipate any way he'll move. But I'm around. I see him sort of.
And then he takes the shot and scores.
Yeah.
And then catches a break again for the second goal. But I think you're absolutely right. You have the muscling, those last two, one on the 90th minute and then one in added time. This goal also had an amazing, the first one, the one that was scored on the 90th minute by 04, had one of the weirdest VARs I've seen in my life. They yeah, VAR
the,
it.
What the and, hell happened there?
They VAR it. They call it off. People are beaking at the referee, and he goes back to the TV, gets one more view that he hadn't seen before, and then calls it back on?
That's not a good look.
So you like to see it right. You do like to see it right. I mean, I'm sure
but of course, it brings up the question, though, is like, but if you have to keep looking at it, like, that's also, that it's, sort of instills the doubt of like, well, hang on a minute. Let me see a different blade of grass. Just, you know what? Like,
we need to pause this game to send this VAR to the Court of Appeal.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of it takes a little bit of the majesty out of clear and obvious if you've got to review your review.
Oh, also, Carranza got sent off for just totally a second yellow on totally clattering Joel Waterman.
Yeah, that's right. That was the other, that helped Montreal's case for sure. there was questions about whether the first one was a yellow, but I feel like the argument other people also tackled other people and they didn't get yellows isn't a great reason not to hand out a yellow on something that's a pretty hard tackle. Yeah, and the second one is like, I think, borderline red card anyway. So, yeah.
Again, to the Court of Appeal point, we're in those moments, the referee can't like sort of do a running tally of how aggrieved any one player or team might be.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. To be like, oh, technically I could have given one back there. Like, of course, yes, you do try to be consistent. But, like, you know, I don't know. I don't get the making such a huge fuss out of, like, whether something was a yellow card or not. Like, I can't care that much about anything, to be honest.
Supposedly,
unless it's just, like, very egregious. But I feel like, if it's kind of on the line and there's been other fouls that were similar and it's only a yellow, it's like, well, now the referee is sending a message that, okay, there's been a few tackles like that. That one was too much for me. And I think it also signals, so that's the bar now. If I keep seeing that shit, then I'm going to keep handing out yellows. Like, I don't know. There's lots of different ways to look at it. And I don't begrudge home teams for, like, having a go every single time, but it just feels like, you know, sometimes your team loses for other things.
Yes.
One last note I wanted to make about Montreal, if you don't have anything else for them,
no,
was also that they brought back defender Gabriel Corbeau from Serie A. I believe he was on loan last year and then went back.
Oh, that's good.
But is now back for good, I believe. And like, you know me, when there's a good defender in the league, I'm happy. And I thought that he brought sort of a different look and a bit of just calm to their back line. And boy, does Montreal need that. So it'll be interesting to see. I don't think anyone's like really got massive hopes for them this season, given just how much change there's been and how many players have left, and of course losing their head coach, Wilfred Nancy, but they're sitting at the bottom of the East, and, you know, they've given people something to think about. So, interesting.
That will hopefully help, like you say, some of those defensive issues. I was now interested in Toronto FC, the other of our, the other team in our Canadian MLS family. Mm-hmm. Who, like everyone else, has been dealing with early season draws or losses. They had that early loss to DC that we spoke about, and then a couple of 1-1s. They just had a 0-0 against San Jose, but they were able in the last match week to get a good result against Miami at home.
Yeah. Like, I guess the theme with all of these teams is, like, you'd really struggle to say they're good right now, but, like, two draws and a win against Eastern Conference rivals is not a bad place to start. No. Especially for a team that I think it's fair to say is, like, struggling and struggling to find their starting 11 and identity a little bit. I feel like, you know, probably just before the World Cup, but throughout the World Cup and now as well, Osorio to me is, like, finally as good as everybody's always said he is. Like, he just looks so much more complete and focused as a player and just so incredibly dangerous. Obviously.
Crushing it.
What's that?
Crushing it.
Yeah. Yeah. We're fans. Osorio and Kay get the goals in that Miami game. I just wanted to go back for a second to the Atlanta game because I just saw my note and remembered this play where Atlanta's just sort of like standing watching and Bernadeschi like looks around, receives the ball and just jogs through the entire defensive half. And at the very last second, Atlanta's like, hey, I think somebody should probably, like, you know, go up to Bernadeschi and make maybe stop him from doing it. And then it's too late and he shoots and scores. As I just love a goal where, like, the entire team is stood still watching. And the opponent's like, all right, well, I'm just going to, like, keep moving forward with this then. And if you're going to let, I guess I'm having a shot. Okay. Just didn't end up.
I will take the time you give me.
I will take the time and chances you give me. That's some true MLS marking there.
I was going to say as well that you know, Lorenzo Insigne was out 3 to 4 games with the strain. I want to say that we're now 3 games into that 3 to 4 games, or is it 2?
I think most recently I'd heard still a few weeks. And that was probably a week ago. So I think he's probably getting close. I feel like he's probably in, like, jogging with the team territory.
That's the last thing that you want to hear if you're Toronto. But I think that it's still clear when you watch them that Bernadeschi is doing a lot of work to make things happen on the pitch, to try and carry the burden of creation.
Wow. That's not overstating it at all. No. I agree. I think given his absence, though, like, it's not been terrible for them. And I feel like that's been, you know, Toronto's been different for a while now where they haven't been solely relying on one player. But again, just given the amount of turnover and change for them, I feel like it's not bad results to be missing a key player and to be, you know, you get the win against Miami without him. You get a draw against San Jose. But again, we've seen that San Jose is good-ish. Something to build on.
Unlike Montreal, got those points.
Yeah.
I've been joking. There's also been a certain amount of chatter, to my understanding, over the past couple of weeks over how happy Insigne is or is not, and with various individuals, including the coach. That's very funny to me that they're in this situation, and I don't want to wish them that, like, oh, maybe it'll be worse when he's back. But that's something that they have to, like, work on.
Yeah, possibly.
I was reading a piece in The Athletic about how badly Real Madrid, former Real Madrid, AC Milan, Sevilla midfielder Isco overplayed his hand and ended up without a club that ended with, but he's still looking at MLS. And I'm like, Toronto, I swear, I double dog dare you. I double dog dare you to put something more inflammatory in this situation.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, I feel like silly season for the rumor mill is going to be going for a good long while.
That's right. There's nothing linking Isco to Toronto except how funny it would be in my eyes, yeah. By the way. That's just
these
the first
days,
thing.
That's enough.
That's just when I saw that he said MLS, I was like, what's the funniest possible destination? And that's what came to my mind.
Could happen. Did we want to talk... what is it called? There's too many things happening right now. Nations Cup? Is that what?
Well, I had a couple more MLS notes.
Great. Let's stay in MLS.
to that we have everybody has been, you know, you were absolutely right. Looking up and down the table, a lot of teams that you expect to be good are, you know, struggling. Philadelphia has 3 losses. New York City has 2 losses and a draw. Miami has 3 losses. It's been rough going for everyone except St. Louis.
Except the new kid on the block, who just seems to be fine, adjusting well, knows where the bathrooms are and everything, and cannot stop winning.
Just
bastards.
Hitting so many bangers. Just hitting so many bangers. I had seen, but did not want to be spoiled. I'd seen somebody be like, I can't believe that St. Louis is scoring these kind of goals every week. And I watched the highlights for RSL St. Louis, and I couldn't guess which goal they meant.
Yeah.
Because they're all amazing.
4 wins and only 4 goals conceded. That's what you'd call a good start. I saw an interesting comment by Jake Nerwinski talking about how, like, a lot of people kind of wrote this team off, and they saw a lot of stuff about, like, you know, the players that had been passed on in MLS and not the rejects from their clubs. And, I mean, of course, I think there's a certain amount of that they're just playing up. But, like, use what you got.
That's true. Nerwinski was a regular starter in Vancouver. If that refers to him, I mean, we like him. I mean, Vancouver should not have let him wander off. But there is probably an element of hype and an element of truth to that.
Yeah, right. But they've just been really annoyingly good. And, you know, RSL's performance in this game aside, they are a complete team and really have something locked in and figured out. And, of course, it won't last forever. They will lose games this season. It always happens. Sorry, guys. But I don't know that it's going to happen anytime soon. Like, I really struggle because obviously, you know, after they won the first 3, I was like, okay, I need to, like, go back and pay a bit more attention to this team. And they look really good. They just look really solid across the
RSL board. In that first half, I will qualify. RSL didn't look too bad. They got 3-0 on San Jose the previous – St. Louis had gotten 3 on the previous game and walked into Salt Lake, and, you know, I felt that they had some chances. Justin Miram looked dangerous. He often does.
Yeah.
And then they just, St. Louis just exploded in the second half with a lot of good work on set pieces, and then also just some slick turnovers, we'll say. Those 2 goals from Klaus are the beneficiaries of smart attentiveness when your opponent is playing the ball.
Yeah. And then speaking of RSL, another note that I'd forgotten about until I saw it just now is then they visited Seattle and that didn't go well either.
Oops.
That was another big result. Seattle, also known as Jordan Morris, pumped RSL for 4 goals after going down 1-0 early on into this match. And again, like, RSL has their moments where they look good, but they got the old Seattle Sounder treatment and just got a little clobbered there. So it's nice to see Seattle back to their old tricks.
Seattle and LA not wanting to be overlooked, even if they have in terms of sitting in 2nd and 3rd in the conference.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, it's crazy to me that St. Louis has 15 points and next closest is Seattle with 10. Like, to have a 5-point spread from the second team this early on into the season, like, you know, it's a closable gap, but it's got to feel okay. Mm-hmm. Columbus, I just noted Columbus because, of course, Wilfred Nancy, aforementioned former Montreal coach, is now their head coach. And I feel like, you know, it's not been an electric start for them, but he's kind of got them starting to hum along now, too. And that'll be interesting because obviously they did struggle at times last season. And so I think we're going to shape up for a pretty tight Eastern Conference again this season, and I expect there's going to be a lot of movement, especially in the top 3.
That's the thing about the expanded, like playoff berths, and I'm not being paid by MLS to say this, is that there are a lot of good teams now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like, especially in the East, you look at that, you think like it's going to be tight because if it was at 6-7, it's like, you know, you look at the teams that are like, you know, classically considered good versus the ones that are actually winning games. But like a lot of the ones that you would put a lot of stock in are sitting at around 6-7-8-9 right now.
Yeah.
We're 5-5-6-7-8. Sorry, Miami, you don't get the benefit of the doubt on that quite yet. So that's going to be exciting to see as various clubs jockey their way up and down the standings. New England, who has alternately in the last couple of seasons looked really strong and had to take some time to rebound, is now in first again.
Yep.
And that's another club that that took advantage of the youth movement with they had their one of their, I think, debuting or younger players scoring the winner on the 88th minute to get a 2-1 win against DC.
Right. Yeah.
Buck. What's his name? His name is something Buck. The young Buck. Noel Buck.
That's right. Yeah.
Yes. So that's exciting for them. And of course, it has felt he's 17 and he scored the winner. That was an interesting game. Every year it kind of feels like it's like, is this an on year or an off year for New England? This is clearly an on year.
Yeah. No, I think that's a fair assessment of them. It also feels like... go ahead.
What were you going to say?
I have a brand new point. So, go ahead.
I was going to say about DC that's not necessarily to say that they did awful here, because I just looked at that. I looked at some of the things that were happening with Christian Benteke, and I just wrote, can football be this simple? he sends the ball to Juan and then gets the ball back and scores, and it's just like, is there a cheat code happening here? Like, how is it this
easy? Is this the point? yeah, he's obviously an immense talent, and like you say, like, DC's got parts that work, right? I feel like you could I guess you can't say the same thing of DC as you said about New England. I think you're usually just like, how bad will DC be this year? What degree of bad are we talking about? They're 13th. They have some points. Benteke's good.
I think that these conferences and where the playoff line sits, it's a different situation to be near the bottom than it was, especially early in the year, because teams have only played like 4 or 5 games at this point. But like, it is a different situation because the playoff line, and if any team chooses to wake up, the playoff line will be closer than it's ever been before.
Yep.
So it's like, you look at a team like DC in 13th out of 15, the playoff line is between 9 and 10th. That, you know, you can't look at where things are at right now, because obviously it's like a 2-point difference. But like, it won't, if a team in that position in a couple of months in a month or two or during silly season decides to wake up, it will be easier than past years. Will that be good or bad? We will only be able to talk about that once we've seen the impact. Mm-hmm. But like, but certainly it does for a team like that, like, create a sense of opportunity.
Yeah. It does feel a little bit too early to be talking about the MLS All-Star game, but it is going to be in July and we'll be playing Arsenal.
This is not an original thought. I have seen people tweet this, but also, had we not moved past this? Is this just because we're doing the League's Cup now, so they didn't feel like doing a Mexican team? I feel like we're stepping back to where we were at a couple of years ago, where it's like we're going to have a European team come in and sort of just like be fine.
I think it's two things. One, money. Second, I think that they kind of have a chip on their shoulder with the UK and they want to bring in an English team to be like, hey guys, we're like pretty good now. So, which I don't get, like we've beat visiting teams before, but, and when I say we, it feels even weird to say we, like,
that's right.
Even
that's
as
right.
A,
you're
like,
right.
A pan
this is...
MLS fan, I'm like, it's not really a collectively like we all got to band together to beat the British. Like, I don't know.
And that's your European club. How do you feel? How do you feel about that? Watching when you watch them come in, this is the second question. Obviously, for a live fan, for a live fan of a club that is playing in one of these games, the opportunity is clear every time a European team plays in the United States, is that you have an opportunity to buy tickets that you might not have had otherwise. But on TV, does this do anything for you? Is this like a benefit for you?
I'll say this. It's going to be the first Arsenal game I've watched in a long time. That's how I feel, if I'm just being honest.
Of course, so, I hadn't.
So yes, in a way. I mean, honestly, at this point, I mean, I feel like we've been doing this podcast for long enough that, like, if they do an MLS World Tour, I'm watching that shit for sure. Being like, "Come on, boys, we can win!" Like, I don't know why, but it's just it's fun.
I had an MLS Cup scarf that I had gotten from a thrift store that was from the first one they did in Seattle. And I was working in Toronto, and I was wearing it at one point for the later stages of the playoffs. I think this was when Toronto Montreal had that amazing. It was the one that was going to that Toronto Montreal had that amazing match. I think that was before the first MLS Cup. Mm. Before I'm trying to remember if that's the same year or not, but I wore it at one point, and I was like, yeah, I just want everybody to have fun. And
I am
he's like,
on
you're
the
wearing
side
that
of sports.
You're wearing so. That because you support the playoffs, not because of any team. And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, that's the dumbest shit I ever heard.
Oh God, it reminds me of being on the MLS store looking at, you know, the season the end of year clearance sales, and I just cackled when I saw that they sell the MLS All-Star jerseys and. And as I'm asking, who the fuck would buy this? I'm like hovering above add to cart. I'm like, I'm the only person. It's just me.
Shout out to the editor who asked me that. Amit, you were right, and I haven't changed.
I just want everybody to have a good time. Oh, I'm on everyone's side.
I just like to see these matches, you know.
We just, we love to play. Oh, man.
I have not yet gotten that same feeling of rooting for the Nations League, but there were certainly some interesting Nations League results. Canada, despite going through massive amounts of corporate...
horseshit. I think is the technical term.
We are having lots of testimony... before the House of Commons committees on various elements, it's not going well.
Nope.
Because you've seen tweets where MPs are questioning whether or not the Canadian Soccer Business Agreement. The MP basically said, "I don't think it was signed properly," and then Canada Soccer managed to match it up. Like after that tweet at some point, they're like, "Oh, we just found the minutes we were missing." You said it because we were missing minutes, but we just found the minutes, so it's fine. Also, there was a note that the decision to let Bob Berarda, the coach who has now been the subject of a criminal prosecution after his time in the Vancouver Whitecaps, that decision was the decision to let him quit quietly was made by Victor Montagliani as to quit yeah. Canada Soccer quietly, uh-huh. who is now a FIFA vice president.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like,
it's
this
honestly,
is going about as badly as you could want.
And with all that stuff at this point, it's just like, and people like, and we wonder why there's corruption. It's like, it's straight to the top. All the way down and straight to the top. It's everyone. That's why.
And you have this issue with this Toronto-Honduras game where they have the top. These games are the first, are your homecoming games for Canada being played at the National Stadium. And they're not opening all of the seats because they're planning to, they are charging between $75 and $150 a ticket. Off the top of my head, those numbers are wrong. I think the price for the price of entry to Canada Honduras was 78 if I recall looking at it.
In this economy,
and it was a half empty stadium, and yeah, when you looked
says people, it all doesn't it?
When you looked at people discussing it, this is a broke federation, and it you can make more money off of selling some expensive tickets than lots of cheap tickets. But it suffers for the team. And you look at this game, an amazing result in a competitive match, 4-1, Canada versus Honduras, Canada advancing to the final four of the CONCACAF Nations League. This could have been a legendary night. You look at these, the goals that are being scored, these two goals in the first 12 minutes from Kyle Larin. Somehow every single time Jonathan Osorio, who we spoke about earlier, scores in Toronto, it feels like a legend-making event.
Yeah.
There could have been more people to see it. Yeah. Could have been louder. It was loud. I'm not going to say it wasn't loud, but it could have been louder.
Yeah. Oh, boy. However, on the results side of things, on the actual game part, I mean, it's a good win.
It's a good win. Romel Kyoto, a Montreal player, never missing a chance to score in Toronto.
Yeah, I mean,
gets the lone goal for Honduras.
Yeah, you love to see it.
The other sad Canada soccer note is that. Janine Becky has torn a ligament in her knee and will not be making the women's World Cup in Australia, New Zealand, out for the season.
Hate it. Not a fan.
Not very good. Sad to hear it. As always, most sad to hear it because that sucks for Janine Becky. She has been an amazing leader for the team, way early in her career to say anything, but she is constantly becoming a bigger and bigger leader in the team and a bigger star and a bigger figure in Canadian soccer. And this is always an opportunity for a player to increase in all those things, and I'm sure one that she was really looking forward to.
Yeah.
That's my first concern. My second concern as a fan of the team is, man, that sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, that's about as big a shoes as we have. Well, second.
That's true. Well, so simultaneously there are good things happening, but it's like there are always, it seems that every time there's one step right now in terms of Canada soccer, there's like three steps back,
mm-hmm.
on various fronts, which is like, it's interesting to call it a crisis because the teams are in better positions than they were 10, 15 years ago.
Oh, it's so frustrating, isn't it?
But at the same time, it's like, I remember back to the Canada Soccer Centennial game where they had those blue jerseys and people were like, wear black over the jerseys to show how much you hate the CSA. And it's like, simultaneously, the team is way better than it was at that point. There have been real strides, but things are way worse in terms of the actual future of the organization and the actual crisis point of the organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
there's that.
with more matches coming up in MLS this weekend, where can we find you online?
You can find me online on Instagram at That's So MLS. You can also find this podcast at thatsomls.com on Apple Podcasts. Please rate, review, and subscribe. Where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Team Bates, www.team-bates.com. And wherever I'm going to be next. We have this conversation all the time on what's going to happen with Twitter, but I'm just like, it's a real mess. It's a real mess, and I haven't been better at posting anywhere else. So if you want to see my posts somewhere, I'm taking requests.
Yeah. Oh, boy. What a world. Well.
And unlike Julian Carranza, don't get sent off.
Wahoo.